session number 21110, Reel 2.
Jerry Locke, Reel 2. So, how would you get your information or orders about firing your gun? Who?
That would come over the intercom. Mm-hmm. The crew commander would tell you to traverse left or traverse right. When you're traversing, when he saw your gun in line with the target, he would say steady on. When he said on, that was your target. And then he would say 600 yards, 800 yards, whatever he thought it was, and fire. And from that first shell, he would either say left or right a bit more, you know, or whether he wanted to get a further range or come down a turn on the wheel, like, you know. It all come from him, actually. Yeah.
So what could you actually see? What was your view?
Well, through the telescope, it was very little. Actually, it was maybe 100 yards each side of your cross. Whereas on your telescope, you know, you just see a little way. But you couldn't see the wider picture. But by standing up, I had to stand up, actually. What's the word I'm trying to think of?
You could see a bit more, could you, if you stood up?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Mm. Yeah. A periscope, that's right, yeah, a periscope, oh, okay. Yeah. Right. And you could see a lot more of that, and I could turn it and view.
Yeah. How safe did you feel in it?
In training, I felt very safe. Yeah, there was no doubt about that, you know. We used to get mishaps, like where you'd have a track come off and you'd have to get out and all muck in together and repair the track and get going again. But that was all good part of the exercise. We always seemed to be going out on manoeuvres and that with different regiments. And some, they'd have maybe infantry regiment guarding a town and we'd have to be attacking it and things like that, you know.
So were you fairly confident of your tanks, you know, of their ability?
Yes. I didn't know at the time, but our tank crew in Helmsley, we went right through to the end of the war together. The only one that was the troop leader, Lieutenant Adams, he, when we were in Germany, had a bilious attack and was taken off the tank. And we had a Lieutenant Kemp come and take his place, and he stayed with us for the rest of the war, yeah. Right.
So you started out then with who? There was you?
Yeah.
And the captain?
No, he was a lieutenant at the time, Lieutenant Adam. Mm-hmm. And there was Trooper Lister, the driver, Trooper Rennick, when he came in as co-driver, Lance Corporal Civitor, he was a wireless operator and gun loader, mm-hmm. And there was myself, the gunner.
Right, yeah. And you went all through, basically.
Yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amazing. What did you think about the German tanks? I mean, did you think they were
frightening.
Superior?
Frightening. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Panther. I didn't fear the Panther much if we knew there was one of those, but that dreaded word Tiger came out was a dreaded word that came out, right, you know.
What had you heard about them?
Well, they're H8, you know. They were so powerful, you know. We didn't have anything to touch it, not until later on in the war when they brought out the 78 or 17 pounders, it was called in them. So that was more, but we didn't have anything to do with it. We went through the war with the 75.
Yeah.
millimetre.
Right. So how long did you stay at Helmsley?
We must have been there about 3 months. How long they'd been there before I got there, I don't know. Okay. But I was there about 3 months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I came home on leave. And while I was home on leave, I had a telegram to report to the RTO on Templemead Station.
Yeah.
And that was to tell me the regiment had moved. And can't think where we went to. We were, Kirby Moorside, and that was under canvas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where's Kirby Moorside?
That's in Yorkshire. I don't think it's too far from Helmsley.
Okay. So you went under canvas there? So yes. Was what about May, was it?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was a bit different.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you cope with that?
All right. The weather was good to us, you know. That was one thing. There's things you've got to learn, like I had a bed on the floor furthest from the door. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to get out in the night, you've got to climb over everybody to get out. And if you have to step on somebody, you got cursed, like, you know. But no, on the whole, it's pretty good.
So you were in a tank crew. Did you sort of stick together one crew when you weren't working, you know? Or
very rare. Mm. We didn't socialise very much. If we happened to be out and saw one another, we might stop. But I had a pal from another, well, a couple of pals, one from another tank crew and one from another troop, where we'd met on wireless courses and things like that. And
so you were under canvas at Kirby Moorside for quite a while? Or?
No, we always seemed to be on the move, you know. Mm. About every 6 weeks we'd be up and gone.
Right.
And a funny thing about the regiment was that if we went to a village or near a village, it used to be one squadron in one village and another squadron a few miles away. In another, very rare did we ever get together as a regiment.
Right. Yeah. So you were doing manoeuvres all this time?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm. And a lot of firing practice?
Not a terrible lot. When we were on actually manoeuvres, when we were on the Yorkshire Wolds, around Scarborough area, it was all manoeuvres, and we could go anywhere we liked as long. They used to have a field with a red flag in each corner. Mm. That was live animals in there. We didn't go in there.
Yeah.
But the amount of wheat and that we cut down, you know, and you just
went across wheat.
Yeah. Time and time again, you know, not just one day. Time and time again.
So it wasn't on the moors, really.
No, not actually. Mm. It was round Scarborough, around that area, you know.
So after Kirby Moorside, you went where?
Oh, we went to Scarborough.
Scarborough, yeah.
Yeah. That was when the regiment was all together as a regiment there.
Right, yeah.
And we must have been there about 3 months. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly where we went from. We went to Kirby Stevens. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we went there, because it wasn't a very good tank country. We didn't stay there very long. And then, I don't know exactly when it was, we went to, split up again, we went to a place called Nunnakirk.
Nunnakirk?
Yeah. That was in Northumberland.
Sort of place was that?
Well, it was a big house and nothing else. Mm. Where we were, the nearest town was Rothbury. Mm-hmm. So
this was just B squadron, was it?
Yes, I was with B Squadron the whole time. This was in at Nissen Hut, miles from anywhere. Somebody had scouted around and found a place big enough to put a football field on. Took us about must have been a mile and a half away, and we were jumping streams and going up hills and that. Anyhow, I had a game of football there, and I playing in goal, and I twisted my ankle, and I couldn't put my foot to the ground. So the officer said, "Come on, we carry you." I said, "No, I should be all right." He said, "No, we might have to do this for real one day." So they carried me back. Somebody had a bright idea when we were crossing a stream. Take your boot off and put it in the stream. I took my boot off and it just went, oof. Terrific swelling. So got me back to camp, and they took me to Rothbury into the cottage hospital there. And I think there was four beds upstairs and four beds downstairs. And to get in between lovely white sheets, it was really wonderful. The MO came to see me the next day, and he said, couldn't do anything about my ankle, it was too swollen to x-ray. He was going on a fortnight leave to get married, and another MO would be in to see me. Well, 3 weeks after our MO come back, didn't know I was still in there. No MO come to see me while he was away. But while I was in there, of course, I didn't get any visitors or anything. The matron said to me one day, "I'll take you out for a drink dinner time. Would you like to come?" And I said, "Yes." Yeah. She said, "Well, get dressed." And she took me out to a drink. Well, in Rothbury, A Squadron was in Rothbury. So I went into the pub, and I was in there. She said, "Do you fancy a game of darts?" I said, "Yeah." Having a game of darts. And in came with a big roar and a shout, the Sergeant Major from A Squadron, "What are you doing in here?" Like, you know. And the matron turned around and said, "I'm the matron at the hospital, and he's my patient, and he's under my jurisdiction, and while he is, he can do as I tell, not what you tell him to do," like, you know. And he didn't know what to do, he went out, like, you know. Of course, I had a big smile on my face, like, which I paid for later on, I tell you.
So you had your ankle in plaster, did you?
No, as I said, in 3 weeks, it went down, and they just said it was a bad sprain,
right.
You know. And I went back to Dunkirk on light duties then. But while I was away in hospital, they changed our Cromwell tanks to Churchill's.
Oh, right, yeah.
All clapped out Mark V Churchill. They were terrible.
What was wrong with them?
Well, they were just old, clapped out things, you know. Seen so many neglected services around somewhere, wherever they came from. And we were told that this is what the future held for us. Well, it wasn't till some time we got moved down. Oh, while we were there, D-Day arrived. And, of course, we were a little bit sore about this. That's,
so you were still at Nunnacook?
Yeah. So we were shortly moved down to Bury St Edmunds.
Oh, yeah. This was after D-Day, was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Long after, or?
I should say 6 or 7 weeks after.
Right, okay, so probably July.
Yes.
1944.
Yeah. And as I said, we still had these rotten old Churchills. And we were told that apparently Field Marshal Montgomery had a meeting with all his aides and all the rest of it, and said he had too many tanks, such as Cromwell's and that. He wanted more heavy tanks. So then that's why we were given the Churchills, like, you know.
Was it a much bigger tank than, you know, what was different for you?
Well, from being able to move it 40 mile an hour down to 12 mile an hour was a big difference. It was a heavier tank. Not a lot more room in the turret. But we didn't go out in much, move about at all very much. And then we were told we were moving. Out again, we went in the tanks. And I don't remember it actually. We went to Woodbury in Suffolk. Mm-hmm. We went through these big gates, obviously, of a big house and grounds. We were taken, I'm not sure now whether it was a troop or two troops at a time, into the hallway of the big house, where we sat on the floor, and there was a big blackboard there, covered over. We were told that while we were there, we weren't allowed out of the camp unless we were accompanied on business with either an NCO or an officer. Right. And we were not allowed out at all. And from there, on the blackboard, we were introduced to the church on March 7th.
So when you say on the blackboard, this was, you had some classroom teaching first, did you?
No, we just sat on the floor and they just said, this is a church on March 7th, and we thought it was good. And this is a trailer which would go on the back, and it's a flamethrower trailer, and this is what you'll be doing in the future. You will be a flamethrowing unit.
So how did it work then? This was literally a trailer you towed behind.
Yeah.
How big was it?
10 ton.
Yeah. What did it look like?
Had a flat top and the sides were sloping. Two wheels with really heavy tread because they were bulletproof tires. Inside they had two 200 gallon tanks and five nitrogen gas bottles. And this was married up to the tank, and it was went underneath the tank and then came up inside the co-driver's legs, and the flame gun was in front of him there.
Right, so who fired the flame gun?
That was the forward gunner or the co-driver.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how did the flamethrower work? It was a sort of gas, was it?
No, it was napalm. It was like napalm bombs you get.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was very thick, like a glue. Mm-hmm. Very hard to tip. We had it in 8 gallon drums and it was awful to get it to run out. Mm. But the five gas bottles opened up and it would put 300 pounds a square each on top of the flamethrowing fuel. Mm-hmm. And then when the flame gunner in front, he had a switch on his gun, there was a nozzle about an inch diameter where the flamethrowing fuel shot out. Mm-hmm. Above that was a jet of petrol for about 6 foot shot out on top of it.
Yeah.
And in between that was 2 electrons. It would spark. The spark would set off the petrol, and the petrol would set on the flamethrowing fuel.
So you first got these at Woodbridge, did you?
That's right, yeah.
And did you go and try the flamethrowers then?
We did a little bit, not very much. The majority of it was classroom work, and the drivers and co-drivers, they were busy learning how to travel with a trailer on the back, how to reverse, another with a 40-ton tank with a 10-ton trailer on the back, you know.
I That must have been a bit of a game.
Oh, yeah. And about 12 mile an hour flat out, you know. Which, when we did get to Europe, we were sitting targets, actually, you know.
So how far did this flame go?
If you had the wind behind you, you might get 110 yards. The wind against you, maybe 90 yards, like, you know. So
not that far.
Oh, no. No, you had to get well in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Were you confident that the tank was well enough armoured for you to get in close like that?
Yes, we had about 7 inches of armour on the front. Was really comforting. But then, later on in the war, when the ATH went through, like ripping through a banana, you know, that used to frighten you a bit, like, you know.
Okay. So you did some practice on the Mark 7s at Woodbridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long were you there for?
I should say about a month.
Uh-huh.
And then we went down to near Southampton, mm-hmm. under canvas. Mm-hmm. And the reason we left there so long was we were late waiting for Mark 7 tanks, which they didn't have enough of, and flamethrowing traders, right. which they didn't have enough of.
Uh-huh. So were you there for long?
Yeah, to the end of September.
Yeah.
And we sailed from Gosport.
Oh, and then you set off?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So did you know where you were going?
No.
Right. Did you have any idea? I mean, could you guess where you were going? You were going to France or...?
Well, we were going to France, but funny enough, it came to at the end. Each squadron landed at a different point.
Oh, right.
And we went to Ostend, actually.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the thing that brought it home to me that this was war was the fact that as we drove the vehicles we had off the tank landing craft, the sailors were swinging brackets out all the way down the side for stretchers to go on to bring the wounded back. Before we even got all our stuff off, you know.
So, when did you know you were going over to Europe? Did they tell you on that morning, or did you get any warning of it?
No, we were told we were going to Europe, but we had a good idea. A fortnight before, all our pay was in French liberation money. It was all given out in French liberation money, you know.
That gave you a good clue.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So what did you feel about going abroad?
Well, I wanted to go. I used to grumble, when are we going, when are we going? And we had a Corporal Glenn with us. He had the MM. He was a wonderful man. He said to me, Lockie, he said, when you get out there, you'll be the first I want to get back, like, you know. And he was right, you know. I mean, I did bombs dropping all that during the war, but...
So what did you see as you came into Ostend? What sort of ship did you go across on?
Well, on a tank landing craft, they wanted to open up in the front. I was below decks, I think. I didn't see a lot, not until it opened up. And then there was a ramp there that we just went up onto a ramp. We were moved out to a place called Trout. Mm-hmm. And passing all these huge German bunkers, you know, shook you a little bit to see the thickness of the cement and that, you know.
Could you hear any battle in the distance or anything?
Oh, yeah, you could hear shells and that, you know. But when we got to Turin, we were there quite a while. It took us quite a while to wait for tanks and trailers, you know.
Oh, right, so you hadn't got your full complement then?
Oh, no, nowhere near. We'd probably get three one day and no trailers. Another day might get a couple of trailers and no tanks. And apparently further on down the coast, the other squadrons were in the same position. They didn't sort of make up one squadron at a time, apparently. They sort of...
Right. So the other squadrons, were they far away from you, or did you join up again, or you stayed separate, did you?
Oh, no, separately. Right. Where they landed, we didn't see them again till the end of the war.
Right.
And the queer thing about being in the flamethrowers was we never worked as a regiment, as a squadron, rather. And very rarely as a troop, either we went in, either two tanks, one tank, whatever the infantry wanted, you know.
So which infantry were you attached to first, then?
Well...
Remember your first assignment, as it were?
Well, we went all the way up through, without any action or anything, up to Antwerp. We were in Antwerp for... about 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
when we were getting the V2 coming in every day. Then we went up to Tilburg.
Tilburg?
Yeah. Plenty of fire in there, but we never come in direct contact.
So you were just standing by, as it were?
Yeah. And into Eindhoven. When we were in Eindhoven, we were surrounded on three sides by Germans. It was known as the corridor, and they were fighting their hardest to close the gap at the back. And it was not very far from Arnhem, you know.
Yeah.
And
so which regiments were, or infantry were you working with?
We were, I believe, the 3rd Brigade. We were actually in action at all, you know. We were parked on the side of the road, and then we were told to go somewhere else, and we go somewhere else. And then when we were in Eindhoven, I went down with pleurisy, and our officers got me into a Dutch person's home. And I was put in a lovely little room and lovely white sheets, and it was really wonderful. And they looked after me well for a few days.
What sort of a house was it?
It was over a shop, and they sold all cigars in the shop. But
was it a nice couple? Was it?
Real nice shop.
Yeah. Do you remember their name?
No, I don't. No. What happened was Ari left Lieutenant Adams, went wandering around, and went down into the cellars and found a lot of German black market stuff down there. So there was a bit of a do, and we moved out quickly. We went to a place called Zeost, just outside of Eindhoven. They said I ought to go into hospital, and I didn't want to go. I thought if I went into hospital, I'd lose the regiment, which I didn't want to do. So they made me up a bed between the co-driver and driver's seat and the turret. There was a big toolbox. They put me in a bed there, and I went on there. And we went to this Zeus. The MO looked after me pretty well, and gradually the pain was going. And we were in a cow shed there, and the letters were going home, and apparently in these letters were being censored, and people were complaining that the officers were in houses and we were in a cold cow shed, like, you know. So they quickly moved us out into private houses, providing the whole crew was in the house and the tank was outside the house. And
Jerry Locke, end of reel 2.